Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone.
And to our viewers from Paris, good night. Welcome back to week 5 of season 3. Our show is about impact investment, and the theme of this season is impact investing, the new normal, meaning it does matter in which sector. It doesn't matter in which sector, business, corporate world, or bank, maybe university you are in. We are all in the same boat called planet. And we'd better to incorporate environment and also social aspects in whatever we do. Would you agree?
Yes. So today we are again traveling, okay, of course, virtually around the world, and this time to a very, very far country, Jamaica. And climate change is hitting the planet, is hitting everywhere, and is happening around the globe. And we already know, at least many of us know, or most of us know, that the indigenous people are increasingly involved and engaged in climate action.
Absolutely. Living in harmony with nature, indigenous people help safeguard 80% of the world's biodiversity and hold many of the solutions to the climate crisis, despite constituting less than 5% of the global population. And I'd like to quote the United Nations Climate Change Executive Secretary, Mrs. Patricia Espinosa, who said, "Indigenous people must be part of the solution to climate change. This is because they have the traditional knowledge of their ancestors. The important value of that knowledge simply cannot and must not be understated.
So, yeah. In addition, the research shows that rates of deforestation and land degradation are much lower in the lands managed and taken care of by the indigenous people. So therefore, guaranteeing community land rights can trace back deposits of carbon while better ensuring the livelihoods and cultural identity of millions of people who rely on these lands for their survival."
So today, discussion will be about what solutions do the indigenous people have for the climate change and how can you participate in that? Before we continue, just a quick reminder, if you like our channel, subscribe below. It would be great to have a lot of new subscribers. But before
you
invite...
You forgot to tell them where. So you have to subscribe by YouTube/Swiss Impact.
What would I do without you? So before we invite our guests, I wanted also to invite you to share your story because I love that.
Oh, so last week, many of you remember, I gave a very gloomy report about the conclusions of the science and the science research articles coming out on the climate change. A few days back, I was discussing with a friend of mine who is also very strongly active in this sector, and he told me the following. We have two options. One, we all give up. The rich flee to Mars or on a mega yacht somewhere in the ocean, and the rest of the planet is left on behind by on the scorched earth.
And really, you call this an option?
That is unfortunately the way we are completely heading for. The second option will be to come together as an humanity and work together at global solutions. Like always, when nature has a problem, she also comes and offers us the solutions. And the solutions are often in front of our eyes if we are open to watch and learn.
So this is what we can learn from our guest today and the message he carries for all of us. So I will give you a hint, right? So I already told the name. Yeah, of course. So our guest today, right? We said already is from faraway country. If you don't know the country, I'm sure you know Bob Marley and reggae music, known as one of the most beautiful islands in the world. And behind us, you can see some of the landscape of Jamaica. So let's welcome our honorable guest from today, Mr. Kasike Nibonrikskaiman. I hope I pronounced it right.
Yeah.
greetings. Usa lokale da yokono. Good day, my people. Yes, you pronounced it well. Perfect.
And it's Thank you, Kasike.
Thank you, Kasike. So, for our guest, he is foremost a Bihaik, that is a Taino medicine man, and was chosen and appointed Kasike, that means the Taino chief, for the Yuka Yeke Yamai Guani, or in English, Jamaican hummingbird Taino people. And he now walks with the Taino name Nibonrikskaiman.
Yes, Kasike is also a member of Consejo de Medicina Ancestral Indígena Originaria del Abya Yala, or Council of Ancestral Indigenous Medicine of the Americas.
I'm so happy you speak Spanish.
Yes, I'm so happy too. Kasike, you're also the main organizer for Caribbean Reaching Peace and Dignity Journeys, which is intertribal spiritual run connected to ancient prophecies of the Americas. And you're also the member of Responsible Espirituales Originarios del Guarapoy Kuntur. Yeah, okay. With responsibility for maintaining traditional ceremonies in the Caribbean, and you sit also on the Jamaica Council of Indigenous Leaders. Wow, today we have really difficulties with pronunciation.
And you are also certified holistic health practitioner with the American Association of Drugless Practitioners and a certified meditation teacher with a mastery of meditation yoga. It's more of your cup of tea.
Yeah, of course. So namaste, brother, amigo, hermano. Welcome to our today's show. We are really happy you could join us, and we are really looking forward to the conversation.
So, Kasike, can you please introduce yourself shortly and the activities of the organizations that you represent today?
Okay. Usa kasire yukuno kalani bonish kaimandiri kasike yukareki yame wani daka. Greetings, my relatives. My name is Nibonrikskaiman. You can call me Kalan. I am chief of the Jamaican hummingbird Taino people. And also, I will speak briefly about some of the organizations that I'm a member of and the work that they do. So Consejo de Medicina, the Council of Indigenous Healers of the Americas, focuses on traditional indigenous medicines. It's a network of people from throughout the Americas that we share our traditional practices about, you know, the medicines, the plants that are being used. We share some of the issues that we're having, some of the issues with policies that are limiting the access to our indigenous medicines. Because as we've discussed previously, Ben, you know, for indigenous people, there is a strong connection between our lands and our practices and our culture. And extractivist industries really impact on our ability to continue our culture and continue our medicine ways. So we support each other and share those knowledges. With the Caribbean region, Peace and Dignity Journeys, that is an intertribal prayer run. There's the bigger Peace and Dignity Journeys. I'm just the person responsible for the Caribbean region. And that is connected to a prophecy, which I will speak some more about later. But the whole concept of it is to connect indigenous people again throughout the Americas, people from Alaska and people all the way in Argentina. And every 4 years, they connect with each other through a spiritual prayer run literally running. So a group runs from Alaska to a central space pre-assigned, and a group runs from Argentina. And along the way, they are hosted by different indigenous villages. So we learn the stories of our relatives throughout the Americas. We learn some of their teachings, some of their ways, so that we can share that with the world, so that we can share that with each other. Because a lot of times, as you were saying before, there's this concept of when an issue happens, it happens to a specific group, but it affects all of us. The issues of climate change are affecting all of us. And it is through these practices and these gatherings that we're able to learn from each other the issues they're having. And probably I may have a solution that can help another community. With white coil,
looking that's forward to hear that later, the solution.
with the R-E-O-G-K-Q-W, the rituals and the person responsible for the medicine of the Gairapoi, the Kundur, the Aguila, the Quetzal, the Warawau, these are the sacred birds of different regions in the Americas. So the Kundur would be South America, the Aguila would be the North, the Eagle, the Warawau, the Red-tailed Hawk of the Caribbean, and I have the focus on the traditional medicines and rituals for the Caribbean. So for us, through practicing our rituals and our culture, it helps us to be in alignment with the climate. It helps us to be in alignment with our agricultural cycles and be aware of what is happening or what we should be doing and the type of mindset we should be in as the seasons mm-hmm. change, so that we're in harmony. We're not trying to do something outside of the season. And it kind of gives us a heads up with a lot of the things that are happening around the globe. And again, I can speak some more towards that later. So that in brief talks about the circles that I'm a part of. And a lot of the work that we're doing is really about empowering the indigenous groups. And behind it, there's a strong correlation between indigenous rights and human rights. As the indigenous people, our view of the planet in whole is that we're not owners, but caretakers. And we believe that once that mentality is shared with the globe, and we can share an understanding on how to live in harmony with the environment, how to listen and learn from it as to what is needed at specific times and specific seasons, so we can return to that alignment and balance, then that mindset could be spread throughout the globe, and we could have caretakers and people holding these spaces to help mitigate a lot of the issues we're seeing from climate change.
Wow, that's amazing. Have you been also running to Alaska once?
I haven't run from Alaska yet. I've been invited to, so I may take up the offer.
It should be very healthy, you know, for the overall state of mind and the body. But I have another question to you, Kasike. So once we spoke and you had mentioned that you promote use of traditional medicine and climate change, right? So can you explain how do exactly you do that?
Okay. So one of the tasks that the Council of Indigenous Ancestral Medicine does is we've started, it's in its infancy stage, but we've started a publication, a magazine that comes out every month. This would be the third or fourth month now. And it talks from different indigenous groups about the medicines. It talks somewhat about the challenges they're having. It talks about this particular season, what is happening there, the medicines that are there, and the benefits. So it's these elders, these leaders, the best word to use in contemporary society now is these gurus sharing their knowledge and wisdom from their region. And that helps to bring a sense of pride and bring awareness to some of these teachings. These are teachings and information that before people would have to travel to these remote areas like the one in the background up into the mountains to learn of some of these things. And now, thanks to the technology and the time that we're in and the guidance that has been given, this information is becoming more accessible. We have workshops, currently most of them are in Spanish, have workshops which speak towards sharing some more of these medicines and teachings. There is an elder, for example, who uses salt water through a particular process to help individuals, to heal individuals. He actually uses it and injects into certain areas that have ailments and is able to reduce swelling. It's amazing some of these traditional medicines and practices that are taking place. The focus of our group right now is as it relates to the coca leaf and the tobacco leaf, trying to bring more information and awareness, because when most people think of tobacco, they're thinking of the plant that is the leaf that is dead, that is dried, and not aware of the traditional healing benefits of the green plant. not many people, mm-hmm. when asked, can identify the green tobacco plant or the tobacco flower, which helps with a lot of ailments, which helps with external wounds, cuts and abrasions, and the healing benefits of the coca leaf that is illegal in certain places. So we have to educate people first and foremost, mm-hmm. about these plants, about these medicines, and that is closely tied to climate change and what is taking place, because a lot of these medicines are not grown in farms necessarily. A lot of these are normally wild cultivated. You go out and you harvest these, and what we found happening is that due to not just climate change, but you know, a lot of the practices that are taking place now, some of them are not very healthy, sustainable farming practices. Spaces, yeah. that we would find these medicines previously, we're not finding them now. So, you know, mm-hmm. that's another message that needs to come up. Before, you would have found a lot of these medicines at the foot of the mountains. Now you have to be hiking up even further. And what that indicates is that clearly where there is the impact of human society today and our practices that are not sustainable, the impact is negative on these traditional medicines and these ways that the communities don't necessarily have the means to protect. And a lot of the work is around bringing that awareness, because everything is tied together. Climate change is affecting our medicine, is affecting our waters, is affecting our way of being. And we need to share the value of what has been maintained for centuries by these indigenous communities, mm-hmm. so that these sustainable development goals can be achieved. There's a lot that indigenous communities have to say, not just myself, but those throughout the group.
You know what is stunning, that you know about SDGs. Many people here still don't know about it, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. I was sitting in on a United Nations panel on SDGs, and what happened was I was so surprised to see, first of all, the alignment between where the world's governments are moving and the indigenous principles. So I'll touch briefly on the prophecy. The prophecy of the eagle and condor is the main prophecy that has united the indigenous peoples of the Americas. And the concept is that the people of the north represent the people of the eagle, and the people of the south represent the people of the condor. And every 500 years, there is a shift between those energies. So at one point, the north would be in charge of the direction of the world. So you'd notice advancements in technology and communication and navigation. And then during another period, it would be the people of the south, the condor, which is a bird that clears the land. So there'd be a focus on healing, on culture and medicine. And the concept is that when the Columbus came and the colonizers came, which that is something that, you know, is brought to our mind during this month of October, the eagle and the condor separated. And it was during that period that we're living now that there was a lot of chaos and there has been a lot of issues, because these winged ones were not holding that space and were not flying together. So the purpose of these ceremonies and these rituals and the peace and dignity journey is not only symbolically, but to physically bring the eagle and the condor back together, which is what in essence we're doing here, that medicine of healing and awareness of how we live in harmony with the land, along with technology and the foresight, which is symbolic of the eagle. And it is only when we bring these two concepts together that we'll be able to share adequately this medicine and information and knowledge. And the fact that sustainable development goals has in it things like living life on land and life in sea, which is stuff that obviously we need to pay very much critical attention to achieve a lot of these things. So there is a harmony taking place now between the technology that is present and it being utilized adequately by tradition teachers and people of a mindset of harmony and balance. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving thanks for the opportunity to share, using these technological means, this information today.
Thank you. So now a bit on a serious topic, because generally I always go on serious topic. So we know that a lot of injustice has been done to the indigenous people around the world. I was having lunch with one of the ambassadors from your continent a couple of weeks back, and she mentioned something. She said that the Western civilizations, the Western nations, are built with the foundation of genocide, while others are speaking of the land expropriated by governments, encroachment of sacred lands by modern society, desecration of sacred lands by mining corporations, or also many much of your sacred lands are used as waste disposal, which you also mentioned. And we also read that your people know how to live in harmony with nature and are in the forefront of it, the protection of the nature. On other hand, you are also facing the brunt of the climate change. So what is your opinion on these? And please tell us, what are your actions on these points?
Okay, so it's two-pronged, right? First is to support our elders, to support our warriors who have always been protecting our spaces. I give thanks to our indigenous relatives throughout the globe, because as I said, this is through unity, through that alignment. When there are issues in Brazil, we support our relatives in Brazil. When they're in North America with the Dakota pipelines and the issues that they're having in Canada with Anishinaabe and other indigenous groups, we support, and they support us in the Caribbean as well. The technology is helping us to come together and to bring awareness to issues that people weren't aware of before. And with that, it also adds to the fact that our culture, our way of being is tied to land. It is tied to these cycles of balance. Our moons or months are labeled by specific things that are happening in our area and in our region. So when there are these issues that come from climate change, when there are these extractivist industries that are taking from these spaces, it heavily affects our way of being. We have learned to live in a space where there is reciprocity. What we give, from giving we receive. From receiving, we know that it is our duty to give. It is not a space of ownership over these lands. It is a space of living in harmony with it. And to do that, we have to grow in the youth an awareness of our seasons, our agricultural cycles, how to work with our animals, how to work with the insects, how to be mindful of what should be happening. And if it is not happening, how we can assist with moving things along. It is having those keen ears and listening to the elders that have been here for quite some time with this traditional knowledge. So that's the one leg of it, right? To inform the younger generation about the practices that have been maintained. And the second part of it is to enforce and train, because we had this discussion, man, not so much educate, but training for the younger generation as well to assist the older generation, because yes, we're at the forefront of, they call it environmental activism. But at the same time, a lot of the discussions and the policy changing is happening on the background with pen and paper. So it is training in how to utilize these tools. And that is where I have to give thanks for groups like Tribal Unity that has been offering free training for indigenous people on how to utilize United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and to bring these proposals and bring the voices to the forefront. And programs like yours, this is giving an opportunity for people to be aware that, yes, Indigenous people exist. It's surprising in this time and age that a lot of people are not aware, and that we have a history of living in harmony with these lands and sustaining and need to have a voice. So it's advocating to have a voice as it relates to what will be done in certain spaces, how it is that we move forward. We have a view of not just seeing plants as plants, we believe that they have spirits, and animals as well. So we have a great respect. We consider all things our relatives. And because of that, it is our mandate and life way to ensure that there's harmony. So for others, the concept of life on land and life in water as a sustainable development goal is probably just related to probably provisions of food. For us, we see biodiversity as something that is necessary because it has always informed our way of being. So the two prongs is to inform the youth about the ways of our ancestors, to have these workshops and educational practices that is led by our people, and two is to have training so they can be aware of the tools and mechanisms so that they can advocate in the 21st century.
Cacique, you know, you mentioned that you educate young people. I'm sure our audience wonder, how old are you? You're talking so wisely. Would you disclose that?
Yes, I am 36. So I am The Joe can call me a yelda, young elder.
Okay, young elder, okay. So we really both agree with you on the point that humans, despite of being the youngest species on the earth, have not only refused to learn from all the elder species, but we have also managed to cause the most significant damage to our surroundings in the very short time, right? So what would you propose as a remedy to this? And what can we learn from the elderly species? I completely agree with you that everything has a spirit, the plants and animals. So what can we learn from them?
Okay. One, the first thing that we can learn, which is one of the most important, is patience. We can learn to understand that things happen for a reason and happen in the time that they're supposed to happen. And it is for us to be aware of that, mindful of that, and to learn from that, to learn from our environment, to observe, to pay attention to the stars. There are so many things that are happening, and because we're caught up in this programming, we're not paying attention to it, right? Every year, there are cycles. Every year, you should be aware that there's a specific time that certain animals will come. There's a specific time that certain fruits will bear. And I think because of this contemporary mindset of instant gratification, we tend to want to force our will on nature instead of learning from it. As you said so perfectly, that most creation stories throughout the globe speaks to the fact that there is light, there were stones, plants, animals, and then mankind. So we have something to learn from all of them. To be sturdy like the stone kind, right? To grow towards the sun like the plant kind, being mindful of that anchor. That is an anchor. It is something to be mindful of, to look towards with each day. And, you know, there are practical things that we can do. And the first one is to be mindful. I know some people look over this and think that these are just practices for self-help and, you know, integration of self and to de-stress. But there's a lot more that comes from it. From being in that space of harmony, we're able to tap into those alpha and beta waves that will come, those gamma waves that come from our brain. And there we'll find solution to a lot of the world's problems. There we will step into that creative space. If we just sit, listen, and focus,
and meditate,
the answers to a lot of the issues the world is facing has been coming towards us. But we're not in that space to listen, to truly listen and hear.
Well, yeah, I mean, you said it, you know, we just can say, yes, you are right. And I actually want to go back to the prophecy which you have mentioned, that all indigenous people will soon come together to protect the world and the nature. Can you tell us more on that? So what is this prophecy about? We'd like to know more. I'm sure many people love that mysterious things and prophecies.
And when so is tell it, us and which that. Time is it supposed to come true? I hope as soon as possible.
We're in the time now. So what
patience.
Has happened?
You just said you need to be patient. No?
What has happened is that in 1992, when the Americas was looking to celebrate 500 years since discovery, the indigenous people of the Americas decided that something needed to be done to show that we are still here. And a gathering of different indigenous groups met in Ecuador around the fireplace and were trying to decide on how can we show, you know, we are still here and to create that shift that is necessary. And while there in Ecuador around the fireplace, different groups started to share their stories, and we realized that there was a common thread. So there's the story of the prophecy of the eagle and the condor, which I had shared, that every 500 years there's a shift. It's a Quechua story, so that the word for them is a Pachacuti, and the imagery is the world turning upside down. But after things turn back, right side up, and we're in that position of things turning right side up, of people becoming aware. I mean, a lot of the knowledge and the things that indigenous communities have been saying, we're seeing now listed as sustainable development goals about gender equality, about life on land, about life in water, about education, about reducing poverty. All of these are principles that our communities are built on. For the Taino community specifically, there is the prophecy of Aura Surei, which is a morning star. Mm-hmm. And that prophecy says that in the 25th generation, people would awake to acknowledgement of who they are and play their part in supporting the rest of the world and community. And we see that resurgence with the Taino community in the Caribbean today. The Lakota people have the prophecy of the return of the white buffalo calf woman who gifted them their chanupa, their medicine pipe, so that they were able to commune with spirit and get the guidance and the messages that are required. So we have been in this time, and indigenous communities have been coming together and have been voicing their concerns and opinion. They have been protecting sites from pipelines and all sort of all types of extractivist industries. And the technology is in alignment with it now, because through these Zoom communications and StreamYard, we're able to connect with our relatives throughout the globe and initiate global movements and global action. So this is where the support from the corporate community and private sector is to really help to promote these messages that benefit everyone. And the fact that this is one planet that we have, one planet that we have to be caretakers of, and that we are responsible for this planet. An issue to our relatives across the globe is an issue to us. So our concerns are no longer just about what is happening in the Americas, but what is happening in Europe, what is happening in Africa, what is happening throughout the globe, because this pandemic has shown how connected we are.
Fantastic. But you said it will happen in the 25th generation. In which generation are we now?
We are in that 25th generation.
We are in the 25th. So you see, you don't need to be so much patient.
Going on your solution, I was just thinking, because I have a dilemma that despite of that, we know that the mining industry is causing a massive damage. The extractive industries are causing damage to the ancient and sometimes even to sacred surroundings. But if we tell them to stop it, that would say that that would mean that we have to say goodbye to our smartphones. We will have to say goodbye to our cars. So do you think that the society is at this moment so developed that we will accept the change and protect the environment without, or do you think we can still go through the change without forcing the people to change their lifestyle?
We have gone through, as a society, historically, different ages. Stone Age, the Bronze Age, Metal Age, etc. And we have been in this age now, or we're in this age now of technology. And I believe that the tools are here that are capable of creating solutions to a lot of the problems that we're having. I think what needs to happen is, you know, more support of impact investment like you guys are doing here, and is to create spaces, safe spaces, so that information can be shared on a lot of these alternative solutions that exist, because our communities would not be pushing for the end of something at the detriment of everyone else. There's always a way, and that is the beauty of, you know, living in harmony and being aware and being patient. And it's for us to come together and decide, you know, the world was able to come together and to create these vaccines and to create ways and mechanisms to try and mitigate an issue that it is facing. That to me is a template that there are other issues that require us to come together. And here there will be sacrifices, because there has been restrictions on travel, there has been curfews. So in certain countries, at certain times, people are not allowed to step outside. But these are necessary for us to reach to the next level of development. And again, world history for our people has shown that this has been something that is continual. So there will be some resistance towards the shifts that are required for us to return to a space or create a new space of sustainable living. And I think it is for individuals like yourself and this program here to get that reach out there, to bring awareness to these voices, voices like my own, on the solutions, on the ways that we need to be thinking. We need to change our mindset first. We need to realize what is the cost of some of these things that we're doing. And when we're mindful of that, we realize that it truly isn't worth it. There should be systems for recycling a lot of the technology and a lot of the things that we're doing. You know, there's so many models of digital information and handsets and devices. There are ways. it is for us to put the focus and put investing into creating these solutions.
Yeah, absolutely. We see all the technologies are available, the money is available. The thing is, we still don't match it in very efficient way, so that SDGs could be achieved in a couple of years, maybe.
Exactly. And then talking about the money and investment and opportunities, So one of the areas you mentioned is that you are working in the field of education. Can you explain what is your activities in the field of education, and how can our viewers participate or support you on that?
Okay, so this is also a two-pronged approach. What we are doing is we have been going on platforms and educating individuals and groups about the indigenous cultures, the knowledge that they caretake and have been actively sharing. We have amongst our community some books that are being worked on and can share with you later on, you know, some of the ways and means that people can support these activities and learn more about it. We have with the University of Ontario a bursary that was established by one of our council members that gives grants to students that are studying, that are indigenous students. Because, as I said, the objective is to educate the youth on the ways of the elders so that we can preserve and maintain this mindset, this way of living in harmony, right? Of being sustainable, because that's what we want for the whole globe. And then eventually share that with everyone else so that they can have that mindset. That's one. And two is to equip our people with the means of protecting their spaces in the 21st century. You know, the time has gone for our people to be defending with machetes and bows and arrows. It's really about the pen and the paper now. So, you know, I had discussion with you about some of these aspects, about health security, about education, health sovereignty, education sovereignty, food sovereignty. These are the things that we need to bring awareness to and focus on, so that the knowledge and resources of the communities can be shared with the globe. We can see examples of best practices and how to create sustainable communities, starting on small scales, and then hopefully this would be implemented on larger scales as well.
But how can viewers support you? You know, you have maybe a Facebook group or whatever you have, you know, to reach out so people can really contribute something, or maybe monetary support to donate. So anything.
Yes, definitely. So we are on social media, on Instagram and Twitter at Yameywani, YAMAYEGUANI. And our email is Mabrika, Mabrika at yameywani.com. So that is our official email. We're working on a website that we'll have come up, and yeah, we're open for suggestion and support on that as well. That will also have a lot of the information on the activities that are taking place with the Council of Indigenous Healers, with the rituals, and kind of help people to find their roots. I mean, the reality is that I believe at the core of it, from the teachings I've received from elders, that the reason that we operate the way that we do and are so disconnected is because of trauma, and because there's a disconnect between us and the siblings, which would be our environment. We see it as us against the environment, and that is why there's this concept of taking and removing. We don't realize that we're really interconnected. And I think once we're able to bridge that gap and create that connection in the minds and hearts of our people, and they realize that when you pick something or take something from the earth, it feels just as we would feel. A part of our culture is that when we're taking plants, we give an offering for the plants. If we don't have an offering, we pluck a straw off here. And what that creates in you is this feeling that I'm plucking this from this plant and I'm plucking this here, and there's an exchange. I am feeling. So I'm not going to take excessively from the plant, because I would feel that as well. So these, there are little things that are held in these cultures that can share so much with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And last time we spoke, you also mentioned that you have solutions for many of the problems that the world is facing today. Do you have some, can you give some concrete examples of the solutions that the indigenous people have that will solve our problems?
People love solutions which are very quick, you know, like especially, you know, when they're learning yoga, because I'm also a yoga teacher, I can disclose a little thing here, and they want to learn to meditate. And of course, it's not working from the first time, right? They want to learn to meditate like that. But it's like a new language. You need to invest some time in that, right? When you learn a language, it doesn't happen on the next day. It's the same here. So I'm sorry. So what are the solutions?
Solutions to all of the world's problems in 5 minutes. The reality is that first, it's that shift in mindset. The fact that we see each other, it is so easy for society, and that has been because of programming, to see the differences between us as human beings and between us and the animals and us and the plants and us as the mineral. It's almost as if even before the extractive industries has started to take away that life force, in our minds, we see everything around us as dead. If they can't express pain the way that we express pain, or we're not able to communicate. And I think at the core of it is, when you understand that we are interconnected to everything else, that is the biggest lesson that the virus has been teaching people. When you understand that you're connected to everything else, like with the coronavirus, the next thing that happens is that you'd be able to spread that message much more rapidly and much faster. So for us, we learn from things that have life force, and the virus has life force, and it has been teaching us that we really need to be spreading and propagating our mindset and our ways of being more rapidly. And opportunities like this really help with great leaps and bounds. So at the core of it, we have people that are suffering from trauma, some of them age-old trauma, because everyone is indigenous. Everyone has a culture, has roots that is coming from people that have sustained ways for centuries. If not, we would not be here. And it is to reconnect with that. So in the area that you're from, how do they take care of the waters? Yes, we have waters running through pipes now. So that kind of separates this concept that we might have of water with life force and not having access to it as soon as we do or as we want. But to educate the youth on that, that, you know, the respect and the connection we should have with water, the respect and the connection we should have with lands. And from there, once that respect is established and it changes our way of doing things, what we perceive as solutions today, we realize we're really causing more problems, because it wasn't based on reciprocity or respect.
You know, Kasike, I'm really happy to hear this word again, interconnectedness, because one or the other guest is always mentioning that. So meaning that people are shifting their mindset towards what you're talking about. And it's really great to see that we have hope. So I believe we can still bring this message towards many millions and billions of people, that everything is connected, that we are all one at the end. But I have another question for you about the medicinal knowledge which you have, which indigenous people have. So in fact, our previous week guest, who is a world famous bioscientist, mentioned exactly the same. How can we all work together that this knowledge of yours produces result for both your people and the rest, or for everyone, right? As we are all interconnected, that also the rest of the world can benefit from that. How can we work together?
All right. So from that root of respect and reciprocity is also to respect the teachings of the indigenous communities, the elders that we have. One of the desires that we have, amongst the council is to one day have these universities that are teaching our ways, so that it helps us to share that with others on a large scale. With from that knowledge, from that mindset, from that information on our medicine, because the ailments are not specific to one category or one group of people. And the issue that we're having is that the practices, there are a lot of policies that the indigenous communities don't really have a say on. And if there's more support from private sector, if there's more support from academia in, what's the word to use, in confirming and reaffirming the indigenous knowledge, then I believe that would be one of the steps that would help to open up the way. What has happened in the past is that there are people that are seeking financial gain that would go into an indigenous community that would take that knowledge from them, and it wouldn't be connected to the community. So they would probably find that a specific plant has certain properties, and they would extract those properties from the plant. So they're not acknowledging the plant or the spirit of the plant, and there are other ways the plant could be used, and there are things that are beneficial for other issues from the plant other than that one molecule or that one item that they chose to extract. And then it cripples the culture for that group who would need that support to sustain these plants and these medicines and these practices. So that information, that sharing, and that support from academia, that support from the private sector with the indigenous communities, you know, giving that respect to these elders and these teachers as they would give to anyone else from contemporary society that is in the medical field.
Exactly. And you also mentioned last time that lot of ancient livelihood of the indigenous people has been destroyed, and also a lot of it has been forgotten. And like you were saying, that we should not give fish to the young people, but we should teach them to fish. So can you please specify a bit more about what you meant by that?
Okay, so one of the things that we need in our communities is, as it relates to economic sustainability, what has happened in that example that I gave, someone would come into our community as it relates to medical health. They would ask questions of the community members there. And, you know, remember, our ways to live in harmony and that kindness and reciprocity, it would be shared. And then that individual would go off somewhere else and is making money off of that practice. And this world that we live in today is tied to, you know, money. So as a result, if they had running water, they need electricity to get certain things done, then they'd have to find other ways and means of doing that, while there is no economic value tied to this practice that they're holding on. A lot of indigenous communities is doing that out of heart, is sharing that out of heart. And I believe that if there is systems that can assist them, I believe that WIPO, World Intellectual Property Organization, is working on something to assist them with the protection of their traditional knowledge. And hopefully at some point they'll be able to add some value to it. So that, as I said, when the communities require things for educational purposes, or they require some funding to help with the agricultural practices that they're doing, they're not just getting fish in the sense of, you know, getting grants and getting money, but getting systems that are self-sustainable, getting assistance to develop something that they can own and they can duplicate in their communities. And it can be an example for other groups and communities as well, because there are communities that are practicing indigenous practices that they call themselves conscious communities today, or eco-villages. We have one such here on our island, Source Farm Eco-Village, that may not identify themselves as indigenous, but they are sharing that mindset and that way of being.
Kasiki, you know, you know that we are trying to transform financial sector into eco-financial ecosystems that can serve all people and the environment. So can you provide maybe concrete examples? How can financial sector support you, and especially impact investment sector, which we belong to, right? So what can impact investors do for you?
I think it would be magnificent if platforms were created for indigenous communities and young ones to have that training on entrepreneurship, to have that training on, and even what you're talking about now, on impact investment, to see the correlation, because there is a gap between these practices that they're doing, that they've grown up seeing their elders doing. And it's the concept that I want to anchor. The issue is that there are practices that exist today that are helping the sustainable development goals and mitigating climate change, that there is no value attached to. And the younger generations that are growing up, that, you know, they need technology to get their education and certain things done, will see that eventually, if there is no intervention, the practices of their foreparents as burdensome and unnecessary. So you'll end up having this brain drain from our communities. So what is required is really to have a system that works to educate specifically these indigenous. You probably have some grant set up, probably have some bursary set up, probably have some scholarship set up that will look to assist these communities, look towards, and I'm saying this to the impact investment sector that, you know, you of good heart and good mind will need to be patient with these communities, because the experience they have had, as I gave before, is people coming in and taking that knowledge for their benefit. So there may be some resistance at first. That's why I said that platforms need to be created for this. Platforms where there are probably, this is something that our community is working on, is a system of moral and ethics when it comes to investors, so that if they don't meet, they have to apply for a certificate or approval, and if it lasts for a year, and after the year, then they have to go through a review. And our communities need things like this because of the experience they've had. You know, people think that the colonization stopped after the 1400s, but it didn't. People are still utilizing our lands, our spaces, our knowledge for their financial gain. And what we don't want is for the younger generation to run into obstacles and hurdles for their survival and decide that it is not important for them to continue with these practices which benefit the globe. So it would be wonderful if there were ways of measuring the impact that indigenous communities have. And I believe some information has come out already on that, on sustaining their practices, on assisting with biodiversity, as assisting with so many aspects of society. But they are not able to assist with poverty and with education. So that is where we call on the financial.
Well, Kazik, I see we are truly interconnected here, because, you know, I also completely always say, you know, awareness and education, we need to start there to transform financial system, to transform the minds for people to act differently. So I absolutely do agree with you. And please, if you have any project which you'd like to finance or get donation, publish them on the Chamomile, on the existing platform. And the time is running. The last call to action, if you could share with our global audience, please tell them, what should they do to become more mindful, maybe?
All right. This is what I'd love to see everyone do. Start with acknowledging the sun in the morning. Pay attention to when it's a new moon, when it's a full moon. Try to be connected with this planet that we're living on, right? Try to understand how integral it is to our existence. Right now, you are inhaling and a tree is giving you oxygen, whether you're aware of it or not. So we're truly interconnected to everything that is around us. And I believe when we sit in that space of awareness of what is happening, it will help us. It will help us to heal a lot of the trauma within ourselves and to bring together a lot of the divisions that have been created in society. This small step, pay attention, honor, give thanks to the sun in the morning, pay attention to the stars at night, pay attention to the cycles that you're going through. Be mindful. Be mindful in your day-to-day activities. And you'd be surprised. Creation has inspired humanity for centuries. Our vehicles, our technology, our planes, all of that is based on what we have seen around us. So the answers exist.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Kazik. That was an amazing message.
That
Thanks
was
so much.
Absolutely amazing. Yeah.
Thanks for being with us today. And I hope that one day we can meet on those blue hills in Jamaica.
Yes.
So thank you very much for joining us. And as you know, that as a thank you to the speaker, you will also be on receive membership for Chamomile platform. So if you register us and let us know, then we will upgrade it immediately. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for joining us. We are really looking forward to maybe to see more of your work in the next episode.
I'm sure we will.
There is much more to talk about.
And the world is too small. We will come across each other very soon again.
Definitely.
So, thank you and bye for now. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
This was amazing.
Yeah. So dear viewers, even if you don't want it, the fifth episode of season 4 ends with this. And if you like our show, of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel on youtube.com/Swiss Impact. Who is our guest next week?
Yeah, you said season 4. It is season 3.
Oh, season 3. Yeah.
So next week, we are having one of our friends, a very old friend, and he's also an intellectual, His Excellency Professor Jan-Peter Balkenende, who is also the former Prime Minister of my country, of the Netherlands, which, not being nationalistic, but which in the field of impact investment is quite very much ahead than the rest of Europe.
Maybe also the little thing for the next week, we have a new course on pitching and negotiations. Check Chamomile, and thanks for watching us today. Act for your future, wherever you are.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people, or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests, who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP, or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.